Dopamine spike through having a sense one has done what is correct or socially acceptable according to the mores of society. To conform to the program or party line of the system by signifying in word or deed one's adherence to or implementation or enforcement of its values qualifies a person as valuable or good in relation to the standard. Thus the feedback system neurologically and physiologically of dopamine is perpetuated through such behavioral manifestations of these egregores, the condemnation or denial of race and those who uphold racially based ideas, they who are qualified as the other. The virtue signaler has their programming reinforced and such reinforcement encourages further behavior of this kind, a recidivism so to speak of the virtue signaling. Within the context of the mores of society, the more one assists those who are comparatively worthless and weak and the more one gives up to assist they who are such, the more of a dopamine spike one has and, amongst the moral majority, the more social capital one receives. Thus to make a display of altruistic bestowal of one's time, money and or effort accrues to oneself treasures in terms of social capital, reputation, a favorable opinion of oneself in the eyes of others and social advantages, power, money, position, etc. This and the feelings one accrues in such displays and in proportion to the sensationalistic nature of these displays is correlated with dopamine and social capital treasure which motivates the virtue signaler to perpetuate their anti-racist activity. Thus, owing to the social rewards gleaned through such behavior, virtue signaling has become a habitual tendency in the behavior of the moral majority with their perpetual displays of altruistic other regard granting them their dopamine spikes and reputation brownie points, the moral majority especially basing their entire existence upon these arrogant displays of self-importance, to all appearances altruistic but in reality motivated by egotism and a desire for social recognition and self-aggrandizement. They who have the brightest virtue signal shine it in the face of the other to the greatest extent that correlates with greater reward. The competition amongst the members of society making their virtue signals is the very substance of the moral majority's existence. They who base their existence on their moral superiority and whose action orients around enforcing or policing what they call morality, i.e. forcing others to conform to the politically correct agenda of anti-white hatred and non-white worship. Race denialism and condemnation are the two concrete pillars which support the temple of the multicult and its anti-whiteness. These pillars are fissured and cracked as poorly made and easily dismantled with the sword of truth. However, given the relativity of forces and the preponderant share of power on the anti-white side, the possibility of undermining this temple of falsehood with the weapons of truth is nearly non-existent. To attempt to critique the obvious falsehood of the multicult and its deliberate ignorance and vilification of racial reality is a non-option owing to the system suppressing speech and monopolizing the organs of information, thereby controlling what information people receive and in what form. Thus the situation as of this time is one of a war between the moral majority and they who are in violation of their moral bigotry, the racists. They are qualified as a modern-day witch and thus deprived of any right to self-defense. The consequences of the moral bigotry of the egalitarian system is a suppression and obstruction of white survival, a denial of its being allowed to be supported through verbal or propagandistic means and more importantly through active means of political organization or self-determination or segregation. Simultaneously the influx of non-whites continues and their increase in the share of the white pie power increases and whites' share decreases proportionally, leading to their ongoing disempowerment and ultimately should it reach that point a race war of extreme chaos and prolonged suffering for not only white people but the entire world and its population, the destruction of the higher culture and all of the fruits of Aryan ingenuity and creative genius. Such is the consequence of the denial of racial reality and the adherence to false principles, those of egalitarianism. True transcendence entails a recognition, not a denial of basic reality. It is an acknowledgement of the facts of the spatio-temporal reality and a recognition that such facts are limited and have their being within a certain set of conditions or parameters that determine their being. It acknowledges that there is reality beyond the reality of this world and that higher dimensions than the purely physical exist. However, and most importantly, it recognizes that the being who is recognizing reality is at a certain level of its being a certain type of being and on that basis is a reality and, insofar as it is to be, must be of this particular type. Any claims to transcendence must take into account biological identity, must affirm and not deny it, and must work within these acknowledged parameters in order to develop and expand these limitations. To ignore the determining conditions of one's being as if they did not matter is to ignore one's being and existence, and thus to bring about one's destruction not only in the physical but in the spiritual planes, to annihilate his being as a distinct being. Accordingly, to embrace a false transcendence of identity denial or outright negation is to simply expire, to precipitate one's demise. True transcendence posits identity, incorporates it into itself and shuns and rejects the active denial or disregard of identity. It seeks to defend itself and its kind and to, with reasonable force, oppose that which seeks to destroy it. The foolish whites who have subscribed to an individualistic ideology of egalitarian oneness and look upon physical biological identity as evil or immoral are akin to a drugged-up bus driver running full speed into a brick wall. The bus represents the values of egalitarianism and race denialism, the driver is a race traitor and race denialism, and the brick wall is his destination, the inevitable destruction of himself and possibly his own kind. If he were simply a lone driver not responsible for harm caused to his own race, his demise would simply be a eugenical means of excising a tumorous growth from the host body of society. However, given that his actions are a danger to not only himself but to others, he becomes thereby a danger and must be dealt with in order for whites to continue to live. The future of the white race relies upon wise and intelligent whites effectively communicating to other whites who have had their mind polluted with egalitarian ideology and informing them of the error of their ways and the proper path toward true transcendence, that being a positing of identity and a sound working within one's own genetic blueprint to expand and incorporate within itself all its aspects and to have the possibility of contributing to posterity reincarnating within his collective group or elements of his being becoming incorporated within that of others or simply being absorbed into the belly of the demiurge and his minions as soul food and ceasing to exist. The flight from reality worldview of Gnosticism that serves as a template of the left wing or that of the rapture or similar theological conception on the part of the right wing Christians leads to an apathetic disregard of identity in hopes of some form of individualistic ascension or resurrection on the earth. This they fail to realize cannot be attained say within a certain biological group which serves as the basis of their existence, sustaining their being at dimensions and levels just as its being is sustained by their own, if only to a lesser degree. That all particular tribal groups are a certain culture organism, in the words of Oswald Spengler and Francis Parker Yockey, implies that in order for the members of this group to continue to exist, their culture organism must also exist. Hence, to exist in any form, one must affirm race and work toward its perpetuation, else one has written his own death warrant and lives against not only himself and any possibility of transcendence but against his own kind and their potential godhood. Ageism. Ageism has always been a presence in modern society. In traditional societies, the ages were assigned certain functions or roles and played their roles according to their proper nature, each generation living according to its own proper nature, the youth developing themselves and contributing to their race without concern, knowing they would be enabled to elevate themselves according to their own caste and to play their role according to their inner essence once attaining maturity. Once they have attained their place in their society, they play their role administering affairs or creating meaningful things that benefit their race or in whatever way improve their kind if possible and if need be at the expense of other kinds. Unfortunately, we are no longer living in a world of tradition, and for that reason there is no mutual honor or respect between generations, with each generation viewing the other as an enemy, the youth viewing the older generations as an enemy and the older viewing the younger as an enemy. Accordingly, there is no harmonious relationship existed between the generations, and the general perspective or opinion held between them is one of ageism. The increasing hostility existent between the generations has been amplified by Jury, and this is a deliberate ploy. Jury understand very well the necessity of a cohesive relationship between the generations, with the elders counseling and instructing the youth and providing for them with inheritance as they had themselves been provided for and inherited from their own parents. Jury has, within the last century especially, deliberately driven a wedge between the generations and this with malice aforethought, knowing as they do the necessity of the transmission of knowledge and of wealth as conditio sine qua non of the perpetuation of one's kind. To destroy or weaken the bonds between the generations is to destroy or weaken the race, and given that Jury obviously intends the destruction of the white race, this is one amongst countless other mechanisms of destruction they deploy against their enemy, who they have chosen as such with belligerent aggression against their unwitting foe. During the early period of the 20th century there were revolutions staged similar to those of today, and indeed prior to this point there were yet other revolutions, and this cyclical downward spiral of revolutionary chaos being counterbalanced with that of totalitarian order serviceable to the architects of destruction. Thus perhaps the origin of ageism was the existence of Jewish intrigue, and the origin of Jewish intrigue was the origin of Jewry. It is a fair conjecture that as soon as Jews were genetically engineered by their reptilian masters the Elohim, they were infiltrating and seeking to sabotage Aryan society. This they have undergone as means of enslaving the earth for their reptilian masters' occupation and transformation of the earth into a slave society of despotism, wherein the broad masses would be subject to having their life force stolen by these entities, and indeed being, as the movie Rakan reveals, subject to consumption by these reptilian aliens as literal food on the animal farm of Zion. Thus the presence of Jewry has instigated all manner of divisive and conflictual operations as means of turning against one another the population of the Aryan society, classes in sexism, ideological conflict of all types from secular humanism and Christianity to New Age variants and to ageism, the generational divide and conquer strategy. Ageism during the Findus-Iecla period of the last century pitted the older generations of Christian fundamentalists and the more rigidly uptight generation with those of the rebellious youth, though the rebellious tendency had been percolating perhaps as an inherent quality of whites throughout their history, finding an outlet in countless ways. The Jews undoubtedly throughout history had provided that outlet, taking into consideration the organic differences existing between otherwise harmoniously coexisting groups and driving the thin end of the wedge between these groups as means of bringing them to a state of mutual destruction and, if serviceable to Jewry, attempting a reconciliation of these groups into a controllable synthesis of opposites. Perhaps these groups, by virtue of existing in a harmonious relationship with one another, were not opposite but in fact simply different, and the relationship was altered by the influence of Jewry toward one of opposition, thus fanning the flames of antagonism and initiating a nigredo phase of their political alchemy. This was and is the case with the ageist sup of Jewry, yet more of their black magic practical idealism, and it was accelerated after they had engineered the first two world wars. Jewry made the second half of the 20th century with the post-World War II generations a period of cultural and by definition generational divide and conquer initiated, a means to deal a death blow to the white race through leading them to embrace radically different ideologies that led them to a state of generational warfare. The baby boomers are the stock example of that generational divide and conquer, and typify the chaos Jewry had engineered through them as its vector, programming their minds with the music of rebellion without a cause and leading them to kill their parents and tune in, turn on and drop out. The baby boomer generation was programmed as a ticking time bomb to self-destruct, but not before they wreaked enough havoc to sabotage and destroy much of the edifice of their own society that their ancestors had created. Though their forebears, the alleged great generation, were typically a hard-working and enterprising generation, most of them had already received their programming according to the template of negrified America, as Julius A. Voller called it, making the greatest thrill listening to jazz and rock music while they partied hearty and played the naughty role in the dead of night. This behavior is taken up by the baby boomers to a lower octave of degeneration and dissipation, adding pills and poisons of all manner of description, taking up the drums of the beatniks and adding some tie-dyed shirts to the mix, driving around in the magic bus and seeking good vibrations. The 50s especially seemed to have sparked off the next phase of cultural degradation with Elvis and transformed into the Beatles by its end, thus signifying a break and yet a continuation to the next turn of the downward spiral of cultural decay in the nadir of the Kali Yuga. And all of this in spite of the talk about the dawning of the Age of Aquarius. Of course it was the dawn, a red dawn of mass chaos, the Negredo phase of fire and brimstone precipitating the end times death rattle of post-modernity. The mantra "kill your parents" revealed the mentality of the baby boomer generation and was indeed the egregor inculcated into their consciousness through the mass media of Jewry. However, the parents of the boomers were no standard to exalt and put on a pedestal, as they had already become molded in the image of Jewish degeneracy. Their predominantly Christian value system led ordinae geometrico to the hippy-dippy the 60s and was, as Oswald Spengler said, the grandmother of Bolshevism, the two ideologies being in effect one an egalitarian, pacifist, globalist ideology that disempowers and castrates its adherent, that renders mentally and spiritually weak and crippled the zealot. Luckily, not all of the great generation nor even baby boomers were on the side of this ideological mind poison, and thus some few managed to preserve the tradition of the Aryan race, if only to whatever slight degree they were able, through books or music or other form of culture, through enterprise and business etc., serving as vehicles of the Aryan will to power. The boomers rebelled against anything deemed conservative or fascist by Jewry in their mass mind control system. Indeed, their parents had rebelled against that which was tradition, fighting against their own race in the Second World War and destroying the last vestiges of the traditional caste system and hierarchy of Aryan mankind. Programmed for destruction, the baby boomers carried forth in their chaotic abandon, living off their ancestors' society and dragging it down further into a state of crude materialism when they had had their fill of thrills and decided to pursue the almighty dollar, making their long, slow march through the institutions. The decent whites who occupied power, they who cast aside the mental shackles of Christ insanity and managed to avoid the pitfall of liberalism, were persecuted and harassed by the Jews and their followers, eventually becoming supplanted and only a few exceptions to the rule remaining. The boomers monopolized power and restricted, owing to their selfishness and failure to mentor younger generations, access to meaningful careers, and thus retarded the progress of younger generations. Given the comparative affluence of society during this time, the younger generations were able to perpetuate the hedonistic abandon of the baby boomers only in a society that was more of a cutthroat nature and more polluted in every sense, culturally, environmentally and racially, with the beginning of the influx of non-white invaders, the floodgates of the once white societies having been opened by the Jewish saboteurs who lurked in the shadows engineering their chaos. Hence, this is why the Gen X generation took to a life of hedonistic abandon, and abandon even more soul-destroying and chaotic than their forebears, and an abandon they assuredly recognized as self-destructive but persisted in, owing to an apathetic disregard of consequences, simply living for the moment and letting the world go to ruin as they chased the latest thrill. Those of them not so fortunate to have the option to live a life of affluence and leisure and simply roll over their stocks and bonds as they rolled about in the silken sheets decided it was a better option to live for the moment and take no heed for the morrow will take care of itself. Thereby they demonstrated the Christian nature of their self-serving, individualistic worldview and lifestyle. Even though many of these rebels without a cause adopted the trappings of Satanism, they were thoroughly Christian in their chaotic saboteur role, what followed of necessity from the values of Christianity, a devil-may-care anarchy against all semblance or pretense of authority, the religion being, to again quote Spengler, the grandmother of Bolshevism. The traditional society exemplified by Hitler and Mussolini was opposed from its beginning by the Christian saboteurs of these respective societies, as was that of all of the other attempts during this time to establish a pagan imperialism in the manner of Julius Evola. Unfortunately, the weight of numbers obstructed the achievement of Nova Roma, devoid of the sour and bitter flavor of Christ insanity, and as a consequence the Kali Yuga spiraled downward further along its course toward the Ragnarok. Jewry, possessed vehicles of the dark forces, worked with feverish abandon to orchestrate a social cataclysm that would realize the undoing of the Aryan race and their culture. Cultural Marxism was the poisonous nostrum deployed by the tribe of parasites, and mixed with the already relatively impure waters of the cloaca gentium of modernity, serving up the Babylonian wine of cultural destruction to the gullible and naive masses. Once the millennial generation were conceived, during the astrological alignment of a planetary grand alignment with Saturn rising, the Jews were ready to bring down the house with one of their rabbi representatives stating that we are now seeing the birth of the last generation of the white race. This generation, of which the writer is one of the oldest representatives having been born during the year 1983, were the beginning of the end of racial atrophy, and this in all senses, culturally, physically, materially and spiritually, all of which process of degeneration was a deliberate ploy on the part of Jewry to bring about the final end of the white race. The technology to being deployed since the 50s for the zombification of the masses was designed to facilitate this degeneration. The education system was simultaneously being engineered to dumb down the masses, while the pollution of air, water and society with poison was also being increased, all coordinated with malice aforethought by Jewry for this intended though unexpressed, covert purpose. The millennial generation was given this label with deliberate intent on the part of Jewry, who had by that time taken control of the institutions. The millennials were thus the herald of the new millennium, the new age, both chronologically according to the Julio-Claudian Catholic calendar as well as that of the new eon of Horus and of Aquarius. Granted, it was and is a new eon, but Jewry sought to co-opt this change and hijack it to act out their biblical prophecy template, to deceive their Christian minions, to attack all of those not Christian, and to visit into their hands the world according to these prophecies they had invented while generating the venerable social cataclysm, as the Jew Albert Pike stated in his letter to Giuseppe Mazzini in the late 1800s, laying out his Masonic plan for the Third World War. The Protocols of the Elders of Zion underscored this agenda in its statements about responding with the guns of Russia and China should anyone seek to sever the chains of their Abrahamic despotism. The millennials had become screened out and zombified through the technology of destruction turned against its Aryan inventors as one of the final acts of black magic on the part of the Elders of Zion. They have generally lacked guidance throughout their lives, their parents, products of the me generation of possessive individualists, having squandered their spare time not spent on accumulating lucre on thrills and indulgence, and, having accumulated only minimal wisdom in their lives, have failed to transmit any to posterity, at least as a rule, though exceptions of course occur. Accordingly, posterity has lost its first estate, being a dumbed down group of mind-control drones programmed from the cradle to interiorize their global monocult ideology, and, having been granted some degree of incentive through serving the party line of the genocide system, having with apathetic disregard for the higher culture of this world and the sum total of achievements of their ancestors, callously threw it away for momentary thrills. This the baby boomers also did, and both they and the millennials share this selfish disregard of that which transcends their ego, though exceptions apply. A classic example is the transmission of inheritance with the baby boomers and younger generations, such as Generation X cashing in on their parents' inheritance and then squandering it on their momentary indulgences, or if possessed of a guilt complex, having still a hazy recognition of morality, of cosmic law, cast a few coppers to the third world as means of justifying their dissipation of posterity's substance. The millennials were the last generation to receive even the vestiges of an education, and were the last generation to have had the opportunity to avoid the total immersion in the virtual hyperreality mind control system of Zion. The laptops and handheld virtual reality illusion machines having been released for mass consumption only during the young adulthood of the millennial generation. They possess, those who were not weaned on mass media mind control devices, a vague and ever-fading recollection of the time in history when some degree of normality still remained, when one could walk outside without chemtrails in the sky or being subject to radiation bombardment at every turn by smart meters, when GMO foods were not rampant, and when the moronic masses had at least some capacity for normal human interaction, however crude and degraded, without the intermediation of their mind control zombification machines. Through this zombification process, they who represent the old world and who have lived experience of what life was like prior to the transformation of the phenomenological space of reality into hyperreality, are being targeted for biased hostility and ultimately termination at the hands of the system and its endless stooges, its slave masses who participate in the tearing down and destruction of their fellows in exchange for the almighty dollar. The baby boomers now entering their twilight years are a thorn in the side of the cabal, Knowing what normal life looked like prior to the acceleration of chaos of the Black Magicians of Zion and their lunatic agenda, now it is terminal phase. The Cabal wishes to eliminate the elderly, and this not for profit and in a financial sense alone, but in the sense of power having a monopoly on knowledge and thus being able to control the minds of the population, determining through restriction of information access what they will call knowledge, and on that basis what the plebeian masses will do and will be prohibited from doing. The biases circulated around about the older generations are designed to turn the robotized youth of society against their elders, the generation of sex, drugs and rock and roll and their degenerate nature, and the millennials know better. The sour grapes served up to the youngest, most impressionable and least educated generation are designed as the bitter fruits of their inheritance, a formula concocted as a witch's brew to make themselves feel better about their low estate and ageist form of communism, a perfect recipe to inebriate their minds with delusions of grandeur and moral purity, making of them perfect slaves to the control system, be it Abrahamic or New Age, the perfect shock troops of globalism or indeed of civic nationalism itself, simply a microcosm of the globalist macrocosm, a raceless shit stew of individuals worshipping the one or gods or science, whatever is suitable to the control system. Those few amongst them of the more rebellious type have no compass by which to guide them toward any auspicious destination, and this deliberately, as the older generations have smashed the compass in drunken revelry, leaving it a shattered device for posterity to figure out its function. Thus they who are full of the revolutionary zeal of youth have only a confused and opaque vision of the future, almost certainly terminal. The elder generations are either, as in the case of the Christians, spending their time abusing the younger generations of whites with their moral bigotry, virtue signaling in their face and applauding their own facilitation of the ascension to power of the intermention while they spit upon their own race of younger generations. Or on the other hand, they are the liberal type of various sorts of socialist humanist who either cares nothing for posterity like the Christians, or themselves have no understanding of what to do, or are powerless and can only reach out so far and assist to a meager extent. The libertarian social Darwinists continue their selfish path, most of whom are too cutthroat to have any regard for posterity continuing on the trajectory of their life's course of maximizing profit and power for themselves and for themselves alone. Those who serve the system are the biggest traitors and derive their 30 pieces of silver through stabbing their own people in the back, either in their Christian churches, Masonic lodges, or in whatever capacity they occupy, digging posterity's grave with their golden trowel, many believing they will ascend to the next planet and that such a sacrifice is necessary in order to facilitate evolution. The Theosophical Idea Jury has concocted to gaslight their Shabbos Goyim with the false light of pretended illumination in their rites of black magic. These traitors will be the ones to experience the false light as they are cast into the lake of fire post-mortem, having taken with them the knowledge that they were instrumental in destroying nature's finest, the white race, and bringing about the close of the Manwantara. Perhaps the new generation will continue like Lif and Lithrair in the Edda after the Ragnarok of the social cataclysm. Perhaps intervention by the Imperial Germans will serve the white race and with it the highest culture known to man, and indeed to forever rid the earth of the pestilential miasma from the east. The anti-youth ideology of a large segment of the baby boomers is further motivated by their Christian values, values based upon spite and a sadistic desire to backstab and assault those not subscribing to their ideological biases. The backstab of posterity given it by the Christian baby boomers, who give advantage to and care only for Christians without regard for creed, color, or indeed any meaningful distinguishable qualities, indeed carrying forth bearers of the mind virus of the religion they cultivate as a noxious basilisk and attempt to transmit to posterity again regardless of the quality or type posterity may be. As a consequence, a niggerized, mongrelized hellhole society reminiscent of Brazil or the Near East results, and with it, as in the cases of these regions, a crime-filled den of iniquity properly understood. The Christian creed, and its faint echo liberalism with its raceless egalitarian humanist worldview, accommodates the death of white posterity and enables the plans of Jewry to succeed should they be able to continue to spread their mind virus. jury, understanding the divisive and sick nature of the anti-white creeds, fosters their spread and holds them out as baits with which to entice the older generations to partake and derive their inebriating power rush of moral superiority by virtue of partaking of them and condemning those who don't partake of the same fare the younger generations who are held out as a model of iniquity and vice according to Christian mores. In the case of liberals, it is an apathetic disregard in the name of transcending race that they partake of to the detriment of posterity. Hence, through this means, the elder generation are turned against the younger, and their ageist bias is used by jury as a weapon against posterity, subjecting the latter to abuse and stigmatization, to shunning and rejection by the older generation who have thereby failed in their duty to transmit wisdom and wealth to posterity, and this in the name of morality, in reality for the sake of their ego boost. However, the younger generation are not without their biases, so they should not be put on a pedestal nor exempt from criticism. They may be critiqued as follows in partaking of similar vices to the baby boomers and their forebears, Gen X, though of a healthier mindset than the baby boomers, not so infected with the Christian moralizing of that segment of that generation, nor so infected with the hedonistic abandon of their parents, having had the press of necessity to coerce them to pursue and honest living will be considered first. That their generation also had freed itself to a greater degree from the mind virus of Christ insanity makes them even more redeemable, more oriented toward a libertarian free-thinking and creative enterprising nature and not of the more conformistic and trusting baby doomer generation. However, they were tainted to a greater degree with the moralism of mammon worship, making of the almighty dollar the sole purpose of their lives outside of thrills and amusement. The few racial loyalists extant are quite well represented during this generation, as this generation were they who were starting to feel the pinch of racial tension to a greater extent and, as a general rule, had less financial means to extricate themselves from the cloaca gentium of the downtown core. Additionally, they were aware perhaps to a greater extent of the mistake made by the baby boomer generation and their ancestors in enabling the non-white to intrude into their midst, and thus had a greater propensity to react against this plague. Those who reacted, as in the case of all generations, were too few and far between, and thus the downward spiral continues to drag down the white race into the cloaca gentium of modern society. The millennials had received an even greater dose of brainwashing and, like Gen X and the generation prior, had been immersed in the Jew-controlled Negro culture, the culture of the other, and had lost touch with their roots. The negrification policy of Jewry had moved forward and had captured the minds of the younger generation, perhaps to a greater degree, eliciting in some a greater backlash and initiating a radicalization process against the hordes of Jewry and their degenerative culture, and in the mainstream of oblivious half-wits a duller acceptance of the phenomenon of urbanity. The millennials had been conditioned to adopt the urban culture and behavior as normality and desirability, and thus had minimal critical distance through which to remove themselves from the percolating shit stew of the multi-cult. They were nonetheless sufficiently content to minimize their desire to rebel, and thus they passively allowed, in the main, the continual downward slide of the diarrhea from the third world to deluge their society. As long as they had sufficient thrills and prospects of status and material comfort, they were willing to play the apathetic role and allow those not so fortunate to fend for themselves and ascribe blame to their victims who were casualties of their apathetic disregard for their own race. The minds of the millennials, and indeed all generations during the time period of the millennials' ascent to yuppiehood, were further indoctrinated with more anti-white rhetoric and the laudation of the non-white, and, recognizing the necessity of condemning their own kind or shrugging their shoulders in apathy regarding their fate, collected their paychecks with self-satisfaction and did what they could to maximize pleasure and minimize pain, nearly all having become to a greater or lesser degree liberal in the classical sense of John Stuart Mill, and angling toward a Marxist worldview either with or without a theological facade. The rhetoric of anti-whiteness was ramped up by Jewry in their moralizing media, working hand in glove with fake events they orchestrated in their theater of the real, slandering and vilifying whites as a demon incarnate of the modern world. The generations throughout this time were played against one another, with the enterprising baby boomers being vilified as capitalists by those in the public sector or who were a casualty of the plutocratic system, and younger generations being vilified as lazy and not wanting to work. The naive and callous older generation projected upon posterity their own lives in historical conditions, not understanding the increased difficulty in obtaining either meaningful employment or any at all, with the legislative and systemic anti-white bias cutting out younger generations and replacing them with foreign invaders in the name of morality and in reality a moral superiority complex. The elder generation tore down rather than built up posterity, while the foreign invaders worked together to build power within their host nation, not having their minds so polluted with the anti-white self-abasement rhetoric that went hand in glove with Christian moralizing and derived from then simply being transformed into a secularized worship of the downtrodden of Bolshevik subhumanity, as Alfred Rosenberg called it. Jury had done a good job of employing their propaganda to demoralize whites and to supplant the myth of the blood which Rosenberg had introduced with that of the mythologization of race or biological fact and the raceless creed of egalitarian nothingness, jury's formula for mongrelization. Within the recent years, jury has moved their agenda forward to a greater extent, setting up the divide between the two factions that have separated whites into left-wing liberal and right-wing Christian, with the libertarians being a class that gathers up all of those not willing to take either extreme and being a catch-all term for selfishness and possessive individualism, being in some cases more socially Darwinistic and others more collectivist and altruistic. Thus, jury has set up ideological traps or snares with which to trap whites and to turn them against one another, while they hide in the background as the hidden hand manipulator orchestrating their political agenda main. Within the past decade, this divide has been increased, creating a greater tension of development in their dialectical divide and conquer tactics, the left wing being the extreme form of feminine consciousness politicized and the right wing being that of the masculine, both in their lowest octave of aggressive irrationalism, the masculine and feminine aspects of beast consciousness. The left hand correlates to the right brain of the intuitive and feminine side of the physical organ of mentation, and the right hand correlates with the left brain through the decussation of the pyramids in cerebral anatomy, thus symbolizing in political ideological form the respective sides of the consciousness. That the house of the white race has been divided against itself as a blueprint for its destruction through its own occupants is jury's plan to eliminate the bulwark which is stood in their way in their gambit for global dominion. The younger generations, Generation Z, is what jury intends to be the last generation of the white race on this earth. Perhaps Z designates zombie or Zion or both in the estimation of jury as yet more malicious mockery of their enemy. Regardless, this generation is also divided amongst themselves and being led against one another through an acceleration of bellicose rhetoric contrived for this purpose. The foolish and arrogant whites, foremost amongst whom are Christians, will happily go to war to destroy their own race should jury instruct them to do so. It is up to the more knowledgeable and wise generations to ensure that they are properly advised regarding jury's plans and to take the necessary steps to place their crosshairs of their justified anger on the Jew, who is the wire puller behind the scenes engineering their destruction. Yet another divide and conquer tactic as relates to ageism is that recently introduced by jury, that between the so-called 1.0 and 2.0 white nationalists, in other words, jury's attempt to insert into the pro-white movement the thin end of the wedge of their invented all-right movement, a nebulous and ill-defined advocacy of despotism, their despotism concealing itself behind the mask of white identity with minimal to no criticism or exposure of jury, and in overemphasis on attacking jury's oppositional invented SIP, the neoliberal. Jury controls both sides and plays both ends against the middle. Manipulation tactic called triangulation. The alt-right styles itself the new right based upon the French Nouvelle Droite of Alain de Benoist, Guillaume Fay and other intellectuals who are presumably funded to play this role, creating the controlled opposition to be play-off against the left-wing controlled opposition. This movement is set up as a pro-white, implicitly pro-white movement created by Jews and funded by them and controlled from its inception to derail the legitimate, real movement they stigmatize and asperse in condescending tones as 1.0. The few years existent between the millennials, Gen Xers and to a lesser extent the baby boomers and the current up-and-coming Gen Z, serve as a basis to insert another thin end of the wedge to perpetuate their divide-and-conquer tactics dividing the millennials, Gen X and the baby boomers from the younger generation. They must do the fighting and who have the greatest chance to employ will and force to achieve a victory in the Rahoa against the Jews and their hordes. The zombie generation has been subjected to a sip of self-aggrandizement whereby they have been conditioned to exalt themselves through being the latest and greatest thing equipped with their own rhetoric and culture sufficiently different from previous culture of the 1.0 caste to portray themselves as superior and to imply condemnation of others on that basis if only in a subtly condescending way. Portraying their elders as degenerates on the basis of their quasi-Christian moral neuroticism that is part and parcel of the alt-right. This entire movement is critiqued in the writer's unpublished work Alt-Kike, Refutation of the Alt-Right. In conclusion, the divide-and-conquer tactics of Jewry spanned the entire range of their SIPs, turning rich against poor and vice versa, women against men and vice versa, and old against young and vice versa. Most whites are still largely oblivious to this legerdemain and blame those they can observe as the causal agent of whatever harm or negative phenomenon they perceive and their lived experience, typically other whites who they in their arrogance and or have naivete would assume are ultimately in control, neglecting or ignoring the presence of the Jew behind the curtain, the Wizard of Zion who manipulates the gears and levers of the system to serve their genocidal plan. Ageism is simply another divide and conquer tactic on the part of Jewry and is their means of sabotaging the lives of whites of all generations, of nipping the younger generation in the bud so they have no means to develop themselves to their full potential or indeed exist at all. The apathy of the comfortably well-off and the sadomasochism of the moral majority of whites is fast precipitating the demise of their own race, and this they either look upon with indifference or a perversely spiteful self-abasement. This must end if whites are to continue to exist, and the only way it will and is for those whites racially conscious to do whatever is within their power to empower their own race, and this in the most effective way. Should one have wisdom, he must confer his wisdom upon those in need. Should he have skills or expertise, he must do so likewise. Should he have wealth, he must contribute it prudently and effectively in improving the life of his own. Insofar as he has time, money or effort, he must employ them to benefit his race as a whole and posterity specifically, as they must be the bearers of the torch of the Holy Grail of God consciousness. Those most able to contribute to the greatest degree to the overall benefit of the white race deserve the most, assuming they would use it to achieve the purpose of the benefit of their own, and that to the greatest extent possible. Those least willing or able to contribute are deserving of criticism and in some cases death, going to their negative presence, their continued existence harming whites in helping the enemy. The fate of traitors of all ages who have harmed their own kind to a sufficient degree of harm is death, whether one be a youth or a venerable old grey beard, the gallows awaits them. Ideological Critique Index Monotheism Introduction, 5-7 Judaism, 8-10 Christianity, 11-16 Buddhism, 17-19 Hinduism, 20-22 Taoism, 23-26 Occultism, Christian Kabbalah and New Thought, 26-28 Crowley, 29-31 Theosophy, 32-37 Satanism, 38-44 Freemasonry, 45-51 Secularism Liberalism, 52-7 Mammonism, 58-63 Scientism, 64-68 Racialism Nordicism, 68-72 Radical Traditionalism, 73-77 Esoteric Hitlerism, 78-88 Ideology. This world of confusion called by some the modern or postmodern world is indeed a difficult world in which to survive, let alone thrive. The confusion is largely based upon false ideas that are themselves a result of deliberate formulation on the part of malevolent forces and a result of the confusion of castes that occurred throughout the history of the world. The cause of this chaos and confusion may be described in such platitudinous phrases as the fall of man or the human condition, and this is a legitimate and accurate description, though its meaning would escape most of those uninformed regarding this archaic history. Suffice it to say that the world in which we now live is a world of chaos on the brink of a reset, a transitional phase from the Kali Yuga or Iron Age to a new Satya Yuga or Golden Age. In order to conduct oneself within this period and to minimize the damage to both himself and others, he must come to a proper understanding of himself, his position in the world, and what he can and must do and what he cannot, insofar as he is to realize his purpose and destiny in life and indeed must not do. In order to guide himself in life, he must have the proper understanding of reality. He must employ thought and reflection in order to guide himself properly through the quagmire of the modern world and to come out, if at all, hardened through the fire of challenge and suffering. It should be clear that no life form may continue to exist in this world unless that life form has steeled itself to suffering and has hardened itself to endure chaos. A worldview, Weltanschauung, or ideology, serves as one's guide. Accordingly, this short investigation will treat of various ideologies currently existent in the modern world and will critique them in terms of their relative value in terms of the fulfillment of the destiny of Aryan mankind, and further propound through such a critique general principles upon which to base one's existence within this world. To start, the writer will define what the word ideology means and make it intelligible to the reader. And ideology is a system or constellation of related ideas that form a certain worldview or template that provides one with a guide for action, a certain form of life, a certain mode of living in the world. The ideology, by virtue of its being codified in a certain human language and that this language has related thought forms strictly correlated with it, implies that these thought forms have a certain influence on the consciousness of the individual who experiences this ideology, and the soul is modified and changed through such influence, as it were, magically. Indeed, this magical influence of ideas and the words which recall them to mind is the means through which the personality is structured and restructured by language. Granted, the personality can be subject to such a modification through other means, but language, by virtue of its recollectability and representation, has a mimetic effect upon consciousness, and, by recalling or representing certain words, terms, phrases or sayings through which the structure of the consciousness becomes reinforced according to this mold or template, and this proportionally, the more one subjects oneself to this influence, the more he becomes a certain type, a proselyte of this particular creed. The sounds, images and symbols, the language and costume one subjects oneself to, indeed the sum total of all of his experience related to this ideology, as a transformative influence on the soul. Thus the prudent, understanding cause and effect through reason and a higher intuition, recognize the nature of these influences and their effect upon consciousness. Either the influence can empower or it can disempower, and this not based upon the object alone or entirely, but on the way in which the object is appropriated by one's consciousness, how one relates to it. However, things having a certain phenomenal structure have a certain quality of influence on the consciousness, and thus the prudent and wise must select certain forms of culture and activity and restrict one's experience to them as a condition of forming a certain type of personality. The ideology one subscribes to brings them into contact with a certain set of objects, persons, influences of all kind, and those things he experiences often lead him to adhering to a certain ideology or ideologies, sometimes consistent and sometimes conflictual and having a certain influence. Thus, in order to craft a certain character or personality, chipping away at the superfluous matter of his personality with the tools of will and skill employed with discernment, he must select the proper tools and understand their causal influence on the shaping of the personality. He must understand how sounds, shapes, words and etc. are correlated with him and the nature of their influence. Ideologies and their related thought forms thus are correlated with certain states of consciousness, all things being equal, and the person will be influenced by them according to his nature, and his actions will also be influenced in the manner in which these thought forms condition his consciousness. Thus, though ideologies in various ideas and cultural influences may at first appear benign, they are in reality very significant in modifying and changing the personality. The prudent will, understanding the causal nature and influence of certain ideas and thought forms, restrict oneself to those thought forms most beneficial to the realization of one's destiny. Only certain experiences will be had, at least until he has forged a sufficiently hard personality in the furnace of his will, and on that basis can subject himself after the fact to strenuous testing to further harden his nature, through subjecting himself to challenging and even life-threatening experiences which serve to empower him. The following examination of modern ideologies will be undergone with this pragmatic orientation in mind. Those ideas which empower will be discussed and in what respects they do so, and those which disempower will be discussed and in those respects. All ideologies currently existing have qualities conducing to power if only pragmatically, hypocritically, and within the context of the modern world of generation and corruption. This fact is what makes them so popular and why they are consistently a presence, especially regarding those ideologies which hold themselves out as sources of joy and peace and various other high-flown terms. For those who use these ideologies, they are control mechanisms which have served to bring into their hands a near total control of the earth and have served to reduce nearly all of its population to the level of witless serfs on a plantation. The ideologies which function to disempower more than to empower in terms of having an enervating influence on the soul will be discussed first, saving the best for last, those which have the converse influence, that of a strengthening and empowering influence upon the soul, which latter ideologies will be further illuminated in light of the errors of the former. Monotheistic religion. Introduction. Monotheism is an ideology that posits or affirms that there is one God or the sum total of being or absolute which one must cultivate a proper relationship to in order to obtain a desirable state of being. It is conventionally associated with pacifistic and contemplative right-hand path practices and purports to facilitate the unity between God and man. However, all things being equal, it is a religion of extinction, a death cult, which leads to the gradual atrophy of one's soul through a failure to strengthen it, the inevitable result of involving oneself in his pacifistic contemplative practices. This applies especially to the laity of monotheistic religion, as the priest caste typically conceals its left-hand path practices and empowers itself while the laity are disempowered, perpetuating the two-tier system of slavery established by the black magicians of Zion. Granted there is a supreme being, it becomes a question, however, what one wants to do with this knowledge or faith to empower oneself and attain immortality, or to disempower oneself and follow the path of extinction. The monotheistic religions are oft touted by people as a source of salvation within the modern world, within the Piscean Age specifically, during which time these religions seemingly arose as it were ex nihilo. Perhaps their origin lies in Jewry creating them as slave religions? The following investigation intends to discuss monotheism with an aim to answering this question. The monotheist would contend that their religion comes from God, which begs the question as to the meaning of this what God? What is the nature of this deity, and how might this manifest in the form of human language and texts, and how does this monotheistic dogma function? Is it in any way beneficial for the white race and its preservation, and indeed is it in any way beneficial for anyone, or perhaps simply a formula for slavery and a poison apple given to Snow White by the Wicked Witch of the West? The writer must concede that he has no distinct or definitive opinion as to the origin or the reality of any variety of monotheism. He pleads ignorance and does not in any way hold himself out as a representative authority on monotheism and its deleterious consequences, which can be tangibly observed in the historical record. Though monotheism has had its historical stains, it is by many claimed to be not only valuable but essential. However, it is essential only to the extent that it poses an existential threat to the lives of white people, as of the time of this writing and throughout, especially the history of Abrahamic religion which dominated the Piscean Age. Monotheism thus is a problem, and one which must be dealt with, and this in the most effective way. The varieties of monotheism can be divided into two broad categories, one which is a set of elements containing only one element, that being a monotheism which is racially supremacistic, its element being Judaism and its religion being that of a tribal supremacy over the earth by and for Jewry, achieved through intricate legerdemain and manipulation tactics. On the other hand, there exists the variety of monotheism which purports to be universalist, for all people, but in reality is actually particularistic and serves as a cover for the racial and cultural supremacy of diverse groups of humans. Though universalist hypocritically and to all appearances, these universalist ideologies of monotheistic religion are inclusive of those not of the original ethnic stock which adheres to them. They may, however, be included only as a subordinate or indeed, properly speaking, as a slave. The following list of monotheistic religions will be presented in light of their probable historical origins and a particular ethnic, racial, cultural group that has formed around this monotheistic conception and/or formed it themselves either through themselves exclusively or as a syncretic cross-pollination of various related ideologies and cultural borrowings from other ethnic, racial, cultural groups. They will be examined in light of what is pragmatically useful or valuable for the white race and what is detrimental, not only useless but overall harmful in light especially of the Rahoa and the power struggle between races to conceal their will to power and